Hey, this is Dave with Screen Geeks Radio. I am here with one of the stars, actually both of the stars, slash director of Dahmer versus Gacy. You really can't even explain this movie. But Jed Rowan, Ford Austin. How you doing, gentlemen?
Great.
Very good.
It's good to be here again.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, with actual decent equipment, and I didn't screw up.
In the new venue.
Yes.
In the new venue.
In the new magical Starfest suite for Screen Geeks.
Yeah, well, I'll let you believe that. Yes, by all means.
Look at all these beautiful women that are sitting around with all these...
And you got, like, sofa chairs now.
Life is good.
This is plush.
Even better yet, I didn't forget to hit record halfway through the interview.
Nice.
That's the best part of it all. Yes. So you are here promoting your new film, Dahmer vs. Gacy. Give me a little bit of background on what this film is about for those who just say, huh? Dahmer, okay.
It's about the government cloning serial killers for warfare and then splicing those serial killers into one giant super serial killer, and they all get loose. They all just get loose and have a party and start killing people all across the city. And the media gets behind them and starts celebrating this journey of killing. And there's a hick named Ringo. And Ringo comes on out and he'll just talk to God in his head. And he
also
just,
played by Ford Austin.
Yes.
And he's on a mission from God to kill the serial killers.
It's very interesting.
And in a line from the movie, he refers to himself as a motherfucking serial killer killing motherfucker.
There you go. And Jed, what is your role in this film?
I play a moronic army sergeant.
Sergeant Pollard Rogers.
Solid Positive Rogers. No, I'm sorry.
It is early on a Sunday after the party night, so yeah, it's all good.
What Ford said, and the typical kind of bumbling... bureaucratic, pencil neck, pencil pushing idiot.
Who cries?
I cry.
You did that on cue.
And I do. Ford let me do my famous scaredy face. And my scaredy face, all my friends know it throughout the years, this thing.
Okay.
That Ford let me do. And
at both screenings, you got huge laughs, dude.
It's immortalized now on
video.
Sweet.
What did they used to say? Immortalized on
film. Celluloid.
There you go.
Oh, yes.
So.
Now, I this is definitely, you know, the B-class type of movie, but what I really enjoy about it is, we can talk about who all is in it in a minute as well, but what I loved was the commentary, the social commentary underlying on this film. That's what really made me connect to the film.
Rock and roll, yeah.
Because there's stuff against... You talked with this with Chris from the Jesus Geeks and Farpoint Media. It's not against God.
No.
Radicalism, extremism, yes.
Well, it's against fraudulent religious figures.
Yeah.
People who abuse the devotion of a flock. In a nutshell, it's about the people... who use their guarantee of entry into heaven because if you donate money or you worship with them, and they abuse that. They take advantage of people, take their money, totally lead them on a path that might not be as pure and devout as if they had just stayed at home and said a prayer at their bed every night.
Right.
Fair enough. And then you also have a great commentary on the cult. I will just call it the cult of celebrity.
Yes, the media,
yeah,
so to speak. Absolutely. Jed, we were just talking about that this morning.
Yeah, we're talking about this morning.
Just how, you know, people have been doing this for decades, celebrating just serial killers.
Well, serial killers are really kind of big business. I mean, magazines, movies, TV stuff, and they want to just scare people and send... Sensationalize.
That's
you know
right.
Everything because it sells, and people have this, you know, morbid, you know, fascination with it, and it just... I mean, how often have we seen it in popular culture? So what I love about the film is it makes a real, it's satires.
Yeah, and the way that we address that is with this main character who is Hal Anderson.
Yeah, the
California movie. One. Yeah. He's you know, he's like a news anchor who just sort of stirs the pot, tries to get everybody all excited at what's going on. He's doing like a literal daily body count. And
God help us when we get the reality TV show star who becomes a serial killer.
Wow. Then,
I think you might have just pitched a great
idea. You shouldn't
have
said that.
Have you got the sequel now? Did you get for the sequel?
You got to trademark that.
Yeah.
You
know?
There we go.
It's like a reality show of Dexter.
But he really, you know, that guy, the TV, the media,
Hal Anderson,
you know, he doesn't
played by Trey Alexander.
Yeah, he doesn't even try to be objective. It's just, where's the blood? Where's the guts? Where's the hype?
Yeah.
You know?
Bloodlust.
His final scene in the film is great. His disappointment and just kind of, man, I'm not going to ruin anything, but yeah.
It's like a whole page out of the Glenn book. The Glenn Beck playbook.
Oh yeah,
all of those guys.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk. Ford and I were talking last night because there's another film here that is not a big studio film. I'm not going to call out names because the guy's extremely cool. The movie looks good, but I said, yeah, it's got a small budget. And you're like, what do you mean? Adrian Brody's in this movie. How small of a budget? What do you think about the term small budget film these days? Because it seems like you got small budget, tiny budget, micro budget. It's just kind of like, you know,
no budget.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like the studio system is now looking at $200 to $400 million for a budget.
Yeah.
And they have the ability to make that money back.
So now $30 million is
$30 million movies are sort of going up by the wayside because they're in the middle and they can't tent pole the movie enough.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're just sort of like going down to 10 and below. And
they really want like 2 and below.
Well, and now they're starting to launch all of these micro-budget companies.
The Paramount one with the $100,000
budget. Paramount
with
a million-dollar fund. They're going to make 10 feature films at $100,000 a piece. And you think about it, like, Paramount can really do that because they have a PR machine.
Oh, yeah.
And they can just crank out publicity. They can have people going Paranormal Activity, the stuff, and sit in screenings and show people reacting and just, you know, it's like they make them, they really just pump it up because they've got the device in place to really market those.
What do you think about that though?
Well, I think it's great.
Okay.
Because Jed and I have always sort of said that, okay, Steven Spielberg's made some great movies in his life.
Okay. Right? Yes. Oh, yes.
But I don't think that the guy could make a $1,000 movie. And for
That's
me,
fair.
It's like I look at somebody who can make a movie for $1,000, and I'm like very impressed. Very impressed. And like I worked on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
We had a sushi bar on the deck of an aircraft carrier for lunch. That's just crazy.
Wow. Okay.
And it's like, okay, so that lunch cost more than some movies that people are making.
Well, you know what else, too? As an actor, and I've learned this, you know, big movies have big politics.
Mm-hmm.
And as an actor or any other person working on a movie, you know, you want to work. You want to be part of it. And when you want to be in the Spider-Man 5 at $500 million or whatever, it's... it's tough
there's
to get
a lot
apart.
Of people who are very concerned about where that $500 million is going, and
exactly. But it's very political.
Yeah,
you know,
and so. It doesn't really. It's not really about the filmmakers anymore. It's about a machine.
Yeah,
and it's about running this gigantic thing so you can just pay the bills at a studio lot instead of like what Jed and I do. Jed and I made a movie where we went out and shot it for 4 days on our own in the back streets of a city. At night,
mm-hmm.
alone, and we got it out there, and we made it's a great movie.
Yeah, it won an award at a film festival, and it got media coverage.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it was made for like just the tape stock that we spent on it.
Yeah,
I'd like to see like one of these humongous directors put out a press release and say, "I'm going to make a movie for $100." Because there was a guy on my panel yesterday who was talking about how much he made a movie for $50.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you look at movies like Inland Empire, that really kind of does attempt to do that.
Yeah. And that guy,
great example.
Name the director.
That's what. Yeah, I'm blanking. It's early on a Sunday morning.
He also directed Twin Peaks.
David Lynch. Yeah.
And
yeah, sorry.
When, you know, he had trouble getting that movie out there, but mm-hmm. he distributed it himself.
Yes.
So that's sort of what how I'd like to see the whole industry go. I think that actors should start launching their own internet distribution sites. Filmmakers should be distributing their own stuff. They should make them for nothing and tell the story.
Absolutely, and that's the biggest thing, is you have a story to tell. And I know that we're unintentionally kind of making Dahmer versus Gacy to sound like this really deep social commentary on the surface. I think underneath it absolutely is, but you have to have your eyes open to see it. And
yes.
It's not a movie you can just switch your brain off and watch, I don't think, at all. But it's freaking hilarious.
Well, and that's because Jed and I both have a background in absurdist
Theater.
Theater. But also, yes, The Right Stuff, which Jed played Dr. Fu Manchu like six other roles over the course of the four-part series.
The Cuban dictator.
He played a Cuban dictator. Yeah. He played a zombie in the third one.
Yes.
You know.
It's that kind of zaniness that,
Phillips beats you down with a bat.
That's right.
Yeah. See, that's right. Beautiful comedy.
That's Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So that all comes out of our theater training. We studied mm-hmm. a lot of Samuel Beckett, Eugene Ionesco, Alfred Jarry, and all these guys from the postmodern absurdist theater movement. And we just sort of recognize that these micro-budget films and these horror films and sci-fi, and they kind of naturally go in the direction of the absurdist playwrights from mm-hmm. the postmodern era.
Absolutely.
And we've made a distinctive choice to address that in our work.
I said this in another interview, and I think it's true that those guys you talked about, Beckett, Ionesco, if they were living today, they would probably be horror filmmakers.
Yeah, they'd be like the Uli Lamel, Uwe Boll, Ford Austin, Jed Rowan.
Yeah, or even those other dudes.
Samuel Beckett, Ionesco.
You just had the DVD.
Richard
Taylor and Zach
Bynes. They have a sense of the absurd.
Those guys are great. Yeah.
And I think that's our answer to the older absurdist, playwrights.
Yeah.
You know.
We're huge fans of the Ben Bizjak Flemco film machine.
Yes.
We love those guys. We love their work. We love Adam the Zombie Killer. We love the the cannibal.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can remember.
The Romance of Cannibal Girl and Incest Boy.
Yeah, yeah. And, and then they've got that whole short stack film collection.
Yeah, they get it.
Out.
You know, they get it. They understand.
Yes.
They understand the genre.
Yes. Yeah. We're running out of time, but I have a few more questions I want to ask.
Yes.
You bet.
You have a rather exposed scene in the film for it at one point. How do you psych yourself up for this? Because you know what's coming. You're directing the film. You're like, all right, I get to do this.
You're talking
this
about
scene
the scene that I have
in the
with
house.
Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses.
That would be the scene, yes.
that would be the one.
Guns N' Roses drummer Steven Adler approached me about being in the movie, and I said, well, what's the level of involvement you have time for? Because he's on tour right now with his new band.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you can either do a voiceover, or you can get picked up in a bar and get taken to a house by Jeffrey Dahmer and turned into one of his sex zombies. So he immediately leapt on it and jumped after that one. And it really was
his eyes twinkled.
Yeah, his eyes did twinkle. He got a little of a charm going for him. But it happened so quickly that
you just ripped the Band-Aid off.
I just kept going. I was like, okay, we're going to do this. And I mean, that scene that's in the shot in the movie, that's the first take. That's the first take. And we did like three takes on it, and I mean, in a scene like that, you really don't want to do a lot of takes. You just want to get it over with and move on. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, just figure something.
Well, especially
else
him,
out.
He was on the receiving end of all that.
Yes, he was.
okay,
and all the nipple tweaking, I think I put his drum hand in my mouth, and. It all just sort of happened right then when we got to the scene, and we worked it out and we did it. And
cool.
It's a great scene. And
it's nuts.
But, for some reason, I've had like this history in films where I've been a rapist. Mm-hmm. I did this movie called Evil Ever After, written by Chris Watson, where I ended up having to rape a 400-pound man. and Randall film star, Randall Malone. Maybe not 400 pounds, but 200, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, then there was, you know, there was another movie where I had to rape a midget. And the raping, that was Slaughter Party. It's a trauma.
The funny, Ford is saying he's run the gamut.
Yes, thank you. That's a good way to put it, yes. So how can people see this film? You're on tour right now with it.
Yes, Jed and I are on tour with it. This Starfest kicked off an 11-city, 2-continent, 3-country tour. Next weekend we're playing in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And then we're going to go to Tulsa. Then we're screening in Pasadena at the Action On Film Festival
awesome
in August.
Awesome film festival.
Yeah, cool. Del Weston and the Action On Film Festival. If there's any filmmaker out there listening to this, submit your film today. You will not regret it.
Just wonderful people.
Yeah.
Wonderful
then we're going to be screening at the Big Bear Horror Film Festival in October.
Yep.
Cool.
We're in also, Big Bear, California.
In Big Bear, California. And we're also screening in London.
Nice.
Hello.
Nice.
Hello. Nice. Top of the morning. We're going to be screening
Dahmer versus Gacy.
Oh, a charming film.
Whimsical. We have we tea have in the afternoon.
We do have UK listeners.
Well,
so, yes.
For all those fellows.
For all you people.
We're basically going to be premiering the film at the Universal Music Gore Zone.
Gore Zone.
Yes. Event nice. On October 3rd.
Very nice.
And there's going to be a tad bit of coverage in the magazine Gore Zone for that.
A wonderful read.
Yes. Be sure to have some toast with marmalade if you wow. Catch yourself.
Yeah, we will be your American ambassadors.
Yes.
Of the film.
So
okay, enough of that.
Then Vancouver.
Okay.
A screening in Chicago. I want to do one in Dallas, New York, and then back to Los Angeles for another midnight screening series at the Lemley Theater chain.
Nice. Yeah.
Where we opened it.
In Hollywood.
In Hollywood.
Right?
Yeah. And we opened it. We had 2 sold-out screenings there. And it was just incredible.
It was this incredible, like, red carpet event with, like, photographers. And,
yeah.
And it was, like, one of those great Hollywood nights that, you know, you remember forever.
A night to remember.
It was, like, all the pizzazz.
Jed Rowan was there.
You know?
Look out, girls. He's single.
Okay, there it is. Okay, I have to ask this question. No one knows what The Right Stuff is. Is it available to view right now? Because I'm going to link to it like mad.
The Right Stuff.
Yes.
I am preparing. Oh, so one of the things that I'm doing this year is I'm launching a distribution company.
Okay.
For U Broadcast Entertainment. It's a publicly traded broadcasting company on the internet. And I'm going to be giving the exclusive rights for The Right Stuff over to the company. So probably in a month, you'll be able to go to ubfilm.com.
Okay, cool.
And find The Right Stuff, W-R-I-G-H-T, stuff.
It's the Wright Brothers as government agents.
It's the Wright Brothers fighting crime and evil with their plane.
Oh, yes.
And episode 1 is Fight or Flight, where they get dispatched by President Teddy Roosevelt to deliver a very important treaty document with Cuba. And then episode 2, Jed stars as Dr. Fu Manchu and his 9 hands. And
I was going to do some lines from that, but I don't remember them. So
that's okay.
Whoa.
I do the
rights make it wrong.
Oh, there you go. That's the laugh.
So
I can do that.
Then episode 3, Amelia Earhart flies back in time through a wormhole at the triangle.
Yeah. Yeah,
Bermuda, and it turns everybody into zombies. So we fight zombies with the plane.
Don't ruin the ending.
Yeah, don't. We I think you have baited.
Well, wait a minute. But then, episode 4, Army of Darkness actor Richard Grove.
Oh yes,
who played
Henry the Red?
Henry the Red.
He was in our theater company with me and Ford back in the day.
Back in the day,
we met him.
He plays
the
my
company.
Father.
Okay. Nice.
Outstanding performance, great actor.
He's incredible.
Good friend.
Yep.
You know.
Very cool. So where can we find you online to find more information?
Yeah, you can just Facebook me, I guess. Anywhere that it says Angry Baby Monkey, that's me.
I just wanted to hear you say that. That's
Angry Baby Monkey?
Yeah, it's just awesome. An awesome name.
Angry
I love it.
Angry Baby Monkey. Yeah, but Facebook me, please.
I love it that you're such a fan of The Right Stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, there really are gems, and you know, we did them a long time ago, but keep, you know, people bring them up from time to time. So I'm glad you really like them.
We put our hearts into that.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, we'll be pimping the crap out of it for sure. But Jed Rowe and Ford Austin, thank you so much for sitting down for me for a bit this morning.
Thank you.
Good luck
thank
on the tour.
Wonderful.
Good time.
Thank you, Screen Geeks.
Yeah, thank you, Screen Geeks.
We love you.